Hello everyone, Steve McKinlay here again with the podcast for the topic of virtue ethics. So this is podcast two, and in the previous podcast we looked at a bit of a definition of virtue ethics and how virtue ethics works, and then we looked at the concept of practical wisdom. So in today's podcast we are going to look at some different versions of, or different varieties of virtue ethics, and I'll briefly explain each of those different variations, and then we'll also look at some objections to virtue ethics. So remember that the concept of virtue ethics, the idea of the virtue ethics theory, is that we hold virtues as the central component of the way that we justify our ethical decisions. And one of the terms that comes up in virtue ethics relates to this concept of happiness, or living a good life, or well-being, that runs through all of the ethical theories. And the term is eudaimonia, which is a Greek word, and it basically just translates as happiness or flourishing, or generally speaking, well-being, living a good life. And so we know in our previous discussions, particularly in relation to utilitarianism, we talked about this concept of happiness and maximization of happiness. And we know that that's a value-laden term, which means that there is no real objective way to measure happiness. Different things make us all happy in different ways. Some of us are happy being on our own and not being introverted, and other people are happy when they're with large groups of people, or they're having relationships and so on. So there's a lot of disagreement about what makes people happy, and this contributes to quite a lot of disagreement about what is the standard of what should be considered a good life. So that said, most virtue ethicists agree that living a virtuous life is necessary for eudaimonia. So it kind of turns it on its head a little bit compared to utilitarianism. Instead of pursuing happiness in general, the virtue ethicists essentially are saying that you need to pursue a virtuous life, and in your pursuit of a virtuous life, you will become happy, or you will achieve eudaimonia, which is flourishing or well-being. So you can see this has a lot of similarities to perhaps some Buddhist philosophies and so on, where instead of seeking out pleasure and satisfaction and so on, we just try to live a virtuous life, and then living that virtuous life, you might achieve nirvana or peacefulness or happiness or well-being. So that's a little bit of a description of the term eudaimonia, which comes up in virtue ethics. So the first variation of virtue ethics that I want to look at is called agent-based approach. So agent-based virtue ethicists argue that moral value is explained in terms of motivational or dispositional qualities of the moral agent. So think of an individual that is a person who is a moral agent, who has an ability to make a moral decision. And it is the motivation or the characteristics behind that person's character that makes them make the moral decision. That's what agent-based virtue ethics focuses on. So in a sense, the rightness or wrongness of any given action can be explained in terms of the motivations of the individuals involved. So if you're motivated to do the right thing, to be kind, to be virtuous, then these are good things according to virtue ethics, right? One particular author, Zig Zebski, I think is pronounced, defines the moral right and wrong actions with reference to emotions, motivations, dispositions of virtuous agents. So the goodness of an action, any particular action, for example, is derived from the agent's motives when he or she performs that action, And if those motives are good, then the action is good. If not, then it's not good. So you have to be making decisions based on your internal motivation. So you have to say, I'm doing this because it's the right thing to do, not just doing it because you have to do it, right? So if you're forced to tell the truth, then that's not being virtuous. But if you tell the truth because you truly believe that it's the right thing to do, then you are being virtuous. So the next version is called exemplarist accounts. So the word exemplar means something that you hold in high esteem as the best example of something that's, say, good, for example, or an individual, for example, that you think is a particularly exemplar version of an individual or example of an individual in society. So in New Zealand, many of you will have heard of Sir Edmund Hillary, who was the first mountaineer to climb Mount Everest, and he is often considered an exemplar person in New Zealand society. So he was a genuinely good person. Most New Zealanders think that he was a genuinely virtuous, good person. He did lots of good things. He spent a lot of time helping people in the Nepal, in the Himalaya, and he did lots of good things in society, and he was considered a very good, virtuous person. I think in Indian culture, you probably might think of Gandhi as somebody who's similar, somebody who is held in very, very high esteem. So this is an example of the exemplarist accounts of virtue ethics. We look around and observe the people that we hold in the highest esteem, and we say, well, that's our example of how we can be a virtuous person, by following the example of these people, right? So according to the exemplarist accounts, our moral system rests on our basic propensity to take a liking or disliking to particular exemplars, like Gandhi, for example, or like Sir Edmund Hillary, and there are probably many other examples as well. The next variation is called target-centered virtue ethics. Now, this is a more modern approach developed by a woman called Christine Swanton in the 2000s. And we already have an idea of what the basic traits of the basic virtues that we think are good virtues. And the understanding can be clarified, and this understanding we can clarify and improve. And it's one of the tasks of virtue ethicists to help us do this. So what are the types of characteristics that we think are good traits that a virtuous person would have? And then we look at those particular traits and we think of how we can improve them and how we can develop them. So in ourselves. So target-centered approach begins where most ethics students would find themselves, namely with the idea that generosity, courage, self-discipline, compassion, these all get the tick of approval. And then what we do is we look at what's involved in these character traits. What do we have to do to be a generous person? What do we have to do to be courageous, and so on? The very traditional or very old school approach to virtue ethics was really started by Socrates. Now, the interesting thing is that Socrates, many of you will have heard of Socrates, and he actually never really wrote anything down. It was actually Plato that mostly transcribed most of Socrates' writings. So Plato was Socrates' student, and Plato wrote a lot of the discussions that Socrates had. And Socrates spent a great deal of time talking to his fellow citizens and trying to get them to explain what was involved in things like justice and courage and piety and wisdom. So these were virtues that that Socrates thought were important. And what he tried to do was get his fellow town people and people that listened to him to develop concepts of the virtues. And the idea is that the attention to our own individual desires and passions skews our perspective about what around us is good and blinds us to what is good. And so we should focus on concepts like courage, piety, wisdom, justice. And then this is a kind of a foundation that we can build a virtue ethics from. And this is different to deontological ethics, because we're not bound by duty or obligation based on duty-based ethics. We're thinking about what is good, what are the good virtues that we should focus upon. I'll just skip on a couple of slides now and look at, just go back to the slide. I'm looking at slide number 16 in the PowerPoint, and how do we go about developing virtues? And the main thing that I want to comment on here is that it seems to me, after a little bit of thought, and this is just my own reflection on virtue ethics, that virtue ethics, more than the other ethical theories, is a kind of mindfulness approach to ethics, in my opinion. I think virtue ethics, more than any of the other ethical theories, is about self-reflection and about looking at our own ideals and our own values, much more so than the other ethical theories. So utilitarianism, for example, really focuses on kind of a calculation about what maximizes happiness. Duty-based ethics focuses on, you know, what is our duty, what is our obligation, and virtue ethics focuses on what kind of values do we consider to be good values, good character, and what should we do. So it's much more of a self-reflective process compared to the other ethical theories, and that's what makes it quite different to the other ethical theories. So I just wanted to make that comment at that point. So how do we go about applying virtue ethics? So this will be important for your assignment as well, if you want to use virtue ethics in the application of your case study. So on slide 18, there's a four-step approach to this. First of all, we should look at the situation, what the situation involves, so the given ethical situation that we're looking at, and then we should identify which virtues or vices might be relevant to that situation. Then we consider, step two, we consider the concerns for the type of action this virtue or those particular virtues would generate. For example, do we require an action which requires honesty? So honesty requires concern for what information we should share, how we're going to share it, who we should share it with, and how that process works. And then we evaluate the options for action in terms of whether those actions appropriately express the correct virtues, honesty for example, or whether they express vices, which might be deceit, for example. And then we choose the action which best expresses the virtue and avoids the vice, and applying virtue ethics, that would be the best approach to take. So what about objections to virtue ethics? There's two or three objections which I'll briefly talk about. The first one is cultural relativism. So when we think about virtues, we often think about many virtues and values as applying to specific cultures. So for example, modesty might be considered a virtue in many societies. So, you know, I can think of maybe Japanese culture, where modesty is a really considered a virtue. But not so much in other cultures. You know, modesty is definitely not a virtue in the American culture, North American culture. And modesty, not really considered perhaps a mild virtue in New Zealand society, but certainly I think in Japanese society we see modesty as a very important virtue. So you can see that there's this variation across different cultures as to what some cultures might consider to be a virtue and some might not. So how would the virtue ethicist reply to this? Well, probably by saying, look, cultural relativism is a problem for all of the different meta-ethical theories, so it's something we have to think about in relation to all of the meta-ethical theories. And it's related, of course, to the problem of the justification problem. So the problem of justifying one's moral beliefs to those who disagree, whether they be moral skeptics or pluralists or somebody from another culture. So it's the same problem that applies to many different ethical theories, and we just have to resolve it in the same way that we'd resolve it using within a utilitarian framework or a duty-based framework. The next problem is sometimes called the conflict problem, And this is the problem of how would what would virtue ethics have to say about particular ethical dilemmas or ethical problems, and particularly when different virtues might conflict or point us in different directions. So let me give you an example to try and explain what I mean here. So this is called the conflict problem. And we might think that the virtue of charity might prompt us to allow a person to be euthanized or die, or we might consider it important, or we might consider the concept of charity to prompt you to kill somebody who might be better off dead, thinking that the world would be a better place. So the classic example is, could you go back in time and kill Adolf Hitler, for example? But then if you take a duty-based approach or a justice-based approach, of course, justice, which is another virtue, would completely forbid killing somebody under any circumstances. So you can see there's a conflict between two virtues there. The other one is honesty. So in contrast to lying or deceitfulness, so if you think of the murderer at the door case study, which we talked about, you know, there's a murderer at the door and you might decide to lie to that person and it's going to save somebody, then, you know, that's in conflict to some extent. But the other, that's perhaps not a really good example. Let me try another example. Let's say that if you, to be honest, you're going to tell a truth to somebody, but it could be very hurtful to that person. And sometimes it might be better not to say anything at all. So in being kind and compassionate, which are also virtues, might mean you should stay silent or even lie, right? So that's the conflict problem. You can see that sometimes virtues come in conflict with each other. Again, the virtue ethicist might say, well, this is also a problem for deontological approaches, as we've already talked about, the murderer at the door example, and so on, right? The last problem is sometimes called the justification problem, and again, this is a problem for all ethical theories. How do we go about justifying our ethical decision based on virtue ethics? Again, this is a problem for all ethical theories, in particular when somebody disagrees about the value of a particular virtue. But as I say, again, this is a problem for duty-based and also a problem for utilitarian approaches as well. So that wraps up our talk podcast on virtue ethics. I apologize for my ongoing cough. It's an absolute frustration to me. I wish it would just hurry up and go away. Anyway, it's Friday. I'll get this podcast up onto the Moodle site. Sorry for the delay, but as you are all aware, I haven't been particularly well this week. I'm pretty happy that I managed to get a couple of podcasts up so we can summarize virtue ethics. And I hope to be in class next week and we can talk about it in a lot more detail. Have a great weekend, everyone, and thank you for listening in.